today is found in the book of Daniel. We are in the fifth chapter of this particular book. Last week, we left off speaking unto you how that there came a hand on the wall and wrote on the plaster of the wall a very mysterious writing. And when this took place, we found that the king and all the others that were at this banquet were filled with fear. They began to tremble. We read that the king, his loins began to shake and he trembled all over, and his thoughts were troubled within him. And he immediately sent for the wise men, for the astrologers, for the soothsayers, and those that were enabled to interpret hard sayings. I left off speaking to you how that God many times in this life speaks to people like he did to this king. Many times there are feasts going on, and then suddenly God speaks. Sometimes a fire, sometimes a person drops dead in the midst of a feast, and all the merrymaking and all the joy is taken away. Many times when people are gathered together in theaters, God speaks. He has spoken in the past. Many lives have been lost. Many people have been injured and received injuries that they have yet even to this day. Many places where people congregate for sports and for entertainment, we find God coming there. In the midst of their sins and reveille, God comes. And instead of these people being all filled with joy and happiness, their faces are immediately changed. And we find that instead of entertainment, there is grief, there is sorrow. Oh, how often does this not take place in this life? We have accounts of it daily in the newspapers. And here this king likewise, we find him trembling all over, his face changed. It was a drunken feast, but I think they were instantly sober. And God does this sometimes to individuals. There are many people that are sociable. Oh, they're what we call happy-go-lucky people. They don't have a care in this world. They live as if they don't have a care. They're always joking. They're always fooling. And this is the way they live. But sometimes God opens their conscience. And all we see that person so change. Instead of being sociable, instead of being filled with jokes, his face is so changed. He looks so solemn, so serious. And this person sometimes don't know what's the matter with him. He goes from one place to another, walking to and fro. Many, many have taken even their lives when the voice of conscience has risen so loudly within them that they did not know what to do with it. Some, they've run back into the world. They've tried to drown this voice by running headlong more and more into sinful things. Oh, how sad it is when God opens a person's conscience and they do these things. It's a blessing when our conscience is made tender and we find that our conscience is warning us and speaking unto us, and that we are led to seek God and cry to him because we are such guilty sinners. This king then, in his fear, he knew not what to do, but we find that the queen, it seems that she was the woman that was married to Nebuchadnezzar. When she heard what was going on in this banquet hall, then she came into this hall. The commentary speaks of this woman that she was a brilliant woman. She was prudent. She was filled with wisdom and understanding. And this king, he cared not about his kingship. He cared not about how that the country was ruled or governed, he left it all to this queen. And now we find when she heard what was going on in this banquet hall, she came into the king and told him, "Let not your thoughts trouble you." She says, "In the days of your father Nebuchadnezzar, there was a certain man by the name of Daniel. This man had the spirit of the holy gods, and he was given wisdom and understanding to interpret dreams and to say things about hard sayings that others could not dissolve. This man, Daniel, your father made the master of the magicians. Call in Daniel, and I'm sure," she says, "that he will be able to interpret the writing that is upon the wall." We have here something, it seems, that this king knew nothing about Daniel. Daniel had been in the palaces of these kings that ruled in Babylon all the while that he had been there. But this king seemed to know nothing about him, a sign and a token that he was just busy with pleasure and enjoying himself. He never heard anything about this man, Daniel. But now this queen mother, she spoke to him about Daniel. And therefore he called Daniel in. And Daniel was brought in before the king. And he spake unto Daniel and asked him if he was Daniel that had been brought out of Jewry, who his father had taken captive and brought to Babylon. Was he the man that had this wonderful spirit, the spirit of the holy gods, and who was so gifted with wisdom and understanding to be able to dissolve doubts and to give interpretations of hard sayings? Yes, Daniel says that he was the man. Well, he says, if you are able to read this writing that's upon this wall, then I will give you a gold chain around your neck, and you will be clothed with scarlet, and you shall be the third ruler in my kingdom. I have had my wise men and my astrologers in here, and they could not read the writing, they could not give me the interpretation thereof. But if you do, I will reward you in this way. Daniel, he spake unto the king and said, "You keep your gifts to yourself and give your rewards to someone else, but I still will read the writing for you and give you the interpretation." He was not seeking anything off this king. He was not looking to be promoted or to be honored, but he was brought there in the providence of God to give an interpretation of the writing that was upon the wall. Some think that this writing was written by Gabriel, the angel, that he came down and wrote this on the wall. And now Daniel was also brought in by God himself to interpret this writing for this king. And we find this Daniel speaking unto the king, and he begins with telling him how that his father Nebuchadnezzar had been given such great honor and majesty by God, and how that he had been lifted up and was such a great ruler over so many people that he could slay who he wanted to, and he could let live who he wanted to, he could set up who he wanted to, and he could put down who he wanted to, and that all nations trembled because of this King Nebuchadnezzar. But that in the course of time, he who was lifted up with pride and his mind was hardened therein, God came and visited him. And God caused him to receive a beast heart, and he had to go out into the fields, and he was fed grass like an ox. And this lasted for a certain season of time until he acknowledged that the heavens do rule, and that it is God that sets up one and puts down another. And he says, now, O Belshazzar, thou knewest this. Thou knewest what went on with your father, but it has not humbled you. You have not humbled your heart before God, but you have commanded to bring in the vessels out of the house of God, and you and your lords and your wives and your concubines have been drinking out of these vessels. You have lifted up your heart against God, and therefore this writing has come upon the wall. We see Daniel, a faithful servant of God, speaking unto this king, telling him that he was king in his father's place, and that he knew all about what had taken place with his father, but it had been no concern to him. He had the same kind of a heart that Nebuchadnezzar had, and he had never humbled himself before God. He likewise was lifted up in pride. He never thought, what shall become of me? But Daniel had said to him, the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified? He thought not about God, had no concern about if he died or what would happen to him. All he was concerned about was having a good time. They were drinking out of these vessels which were made of gold and of silver and of brass and of wood and of stone. And probably they were beautiful vessels. They were used in the temple back in Jerusalem. Nebuchadnezzar had taken them as treasures and put them in his own temple, but he had never taken them out of the temple like Belshazzar did, and Belshazzar was using them to drink out of. This sin that he was committing is called sacrilege. In other words, robbing God and profaning holy things which are used for religious worship. This sin this king was committing at this present time. And that God in whose hand his breath was, and whose were all his ways, had he not glorified. This king, my hearers, is a type of each and every one of us. Upon their minds, but making money, getting rich in this world. They have their hearts set upon gold and silver and riches. How many other people have their hearts set upon buying houses, building them, filling them with beautiful furniture, and making them a place that may be admired by so many others? Examine yourselves, my hearers. Have I touched something that's true by you? Are not these the gods that you worship? Just like these people, the king and all the people that were at this banquet, worshiping gold and silver, worshiping wood and stone. These are the things that are on your minds continually, but to God, in whose hand your breath is, you have no thought of. This God who breathed the breath of life into the nostrils of Adam, has also breathed the breath of life into my and your nostrils. And he could in one moment cut this breath off. Just think of it. It's just a simple thing. We breathe. You realize it not. But if you couldn't breathe, you would immediately die. And now it is God in whose hand our life is. And God has designated how long we shall live here upon earth. He has given us in his word that if we are normally living, we live to be about 70. If we are writing that was upon the wall. And the writing was, mini, mini, tekel, upharsin. And Daniel begins to interpret these words, mini, mini, which means thy kingdom has come to an end. It is finished. It was said twice, mini. There was nothing else to be expected but that the kingdom over which he was king would most certainly be finished. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and found wanting. This tekel means that he was, according to the Hebrews, found too light. Upharsin means that the kingdom would be divided unto the Medes and unto the Persians, and it would be a prey unto them to do with it whatever they wanted to. These words are very important, my hearers. This word, mini, mini, meant so much as to this king that God had given his kingdom over unto someone else, and that it would most certainly be finished, that his kingdom was numbered, and that he likewise was numbered. This teaches us likewise, my hearers, that we also are numbered. Our days are numbered. We know not how soon death may come upon us. It came very quickly upon this king. That very night, God took away his life. And so it is with each and every one of us. The days of our lives are passing by very swiftly. They are like a handbreadth. And we know not how soon our number may be up, and we will have to appear before God. It is most certainly true that we must die, and then cometh the judgment. We find Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and found wanting. This word means, according to Eastern custom, and especially in Egypt, when a person died, they weighed up the person's good deeds and his evil deeds. Before any person was buried, they did this. Otherwise, they would find no entrance into the presence of Osiris, their god. There is a saying in the East, often they say, I know the man, I have weighed him. This being weighed in the balances and found wanting. My hearers, God weighed this king. This king, his life had been one of sin, of recklessness, of carelessness, nothing else but pleasure and idolatry. And where God was weighing this king, one side of the scale went all the way down, and the other side went up. There was nothing of God in this king, and he was found wanting. Too late. Let me bring this home to you, my hearers. Tico, should God ever say that to me and you, it's finished, forever finished. Weighed in the balances and found wanting. Oh, I'm sure every one of us, if we should examine ourselves and examine our lives, and whereby should we put it to the test? Nothing else but this precious word. If we come to the word of God and we examine our lives according to this testimony, then we will say tikkun of ourselves. We will be found wanting. Why? Because this word testifies against us. This word teaches us that we are sinners, and our lives prove it. That we do nothing else but sin and evil in God's holy sight. And because of our sins and of our guilt, then we must say tikkun. We shall be found wanting. If we go on therein and die therein, it'll be a lost battle for us. When our number is up, and when death comes, and we have to appear before God, and he begins to weigh us according to his law and according to his testimony, then we will be found wanting. And then in the great day of judgment, when every one of us will stand before that glorious throne, then we will have to do with a just judge. And there we will be weighed justly, uprightly. There'll be no buying this judge off. No good deeds, no money, no tears, no resolutions, no promises or help in this great day. We will stand before a just judge who must judge us according as we have done, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Oh, my hearers, and may this solemn thought be brought home to your hearts. How will it go with me, personally, in that great day? Will I be found wanting? Will I be weighed by that judge? And will he say to me, go away from me, I have never known thee? And will you then begin to say, as some will say, have we not prophesied in thy name? Have we not done wonderful things in thy name? And then he will openly declare that he did not know them. And now every child of God, if I have any present in my audience, they likewise must say, tikkun, I shall be found wanting. Why? Because they are sinners in God's holy sight. And sin is so strong, so powerful. It is only those that are made acquainted with sin that learn to know this. How few know the power of sin, how that it goes through everything that is in a person, and that person finds he's helpless, he's powerless against this great enemy, sin. And where such poor sinners fall sometimes headlong into this and into that sin, then they say, tikkun, I wouldn't be the way I am. I wouldn't live the way I am. I wouldn't talk the way I do. I wouldn't act the way I do if I was a child of God. I must say, I will be found wanting in the great day of the counts. Oh, how many of God's dear children are afraid, filled with fears, that this shall be their lot when they come to die. And yet I would encourage you. How could I encourage you? It is only God that could do that. But there are some amongst my hearers, I believe, who have experienced in this life that when it could not go anymore with them, when they gave up, when they weren't any child of God anymore in their own estimation, when they couldn't believe anymore that there was anything going on in them, then they came under the means of grace, or they read the Bible, and suddenly their mind, their heart was arrested by a certain portion of the Word. The Word was brought home, and they had to believe that Word. They didn't dare accept the Word, but God gave them such faith to receive this Word, that it was for their comfort, for their encouragement. Often they are filled with doubts, with fear, with unbelief, because of their lives, because of their sins. And then God comes and speaks to them and encourages them in the midst of all their despondencies and in all their troubles. He comes. And he gives them a mark, he gives them a sign, he gives them a token that he has a favor towards them. And because they have these things, then my hearers, when sin again becomes so strong and so powerful, that they begin to doubt all these things that they have had. They say that couldn't be from God. But when God begins a good work in a person's soul, he takes notice of that work, and he will keep it alive. And now amidst all your doubts and all your fears, and writing Tico across your heart and saying, I'm sure to be found wanting, these things that God has given you. Has he given you the taste of his grace? Has he given you the taste of his mercy? Have you experienced something of his love in your soul? Have you again and again have a witness from heaven in your breast? These things, in the sight of God, weigh more than all your doubts, than all your sins, than all your fears. God will take notice of that. There may be somebody here that says, I know. I wouldn't want to deny that I never had anything like that. But I miss Jesus. And missing Jesus, I fear that I will be found wanting when God calls upon me to enter into eternity. How can I enter into eternity without Christ? I have no righteousness. I have no covering. I have no blood that has been applied to my soul to cleanse me, and I fear I will stand before his tribunal, and I will be found wanting. Well, I know your fears. I have them myself, or I never would be able to talk about them. But my hearers, you would not want to deny that he never done nothing to you. You would not want to deny that he is the only one that can save you. You would not want to deny that you have been given to see the all-sufficiency of this precious Christ, that you have seen everything in his righteousness, in his blood, in his death, in his resurrection, in his ascension, in his sitting at the right hand of God. You have said, this is the Savior that I need. And at times you have found your heart going out to him, to possess him. And now you may have such thoughts as I've just described. But he says, I know the thoughts that I think of you. Thoughts of peace and not of evil. All he is thinking of you, he cares for you. And most certainly in that great day of accounts, he will take notice of those things that he has given unto you. I would bring before you an experience that we have in the Old Testament of a certain woman who played the harlot with Judah, and of whom she desired to have his signet ring and his cane. And when it was told Judah that his daughter-in-law had played the harlot, then he said, bring her out and let her be burnt. And she came to him and said, of this person, she says, I am with child. And there it was, his own signet ring. It was his own cane that she had. And so, my hearers, when you come before this great king, then you may present these signs, these tokens, and say, Lord, did you not give me these things? Are they not of you? And will he ever say they were not? You may doubt they were. You may fear they weren't. But when you receive them, you received, I would say, even a crumb of faith to believe that it was of him. Oh, you will never have God say to you, Tekel, you shall be found wanting. The Euphrasin, the kingdom would be divided. It would be given unto the Medes and to the Persians, and they would have it as a prey. Every person that comes before the tribunal of God and who is found wanting, they will be driven away with the devil to be his prey to all eternity. Awful eternity for any person to whom God says, Tekel. This he will never say to one of his dear children. And after Daniel had said this to this king, we find this king not angry. No. No, he had listened and he had believed what Daniel said was the truth. And he immediately commanded that Daniel should be clothed with scarlet, a gold chain around his neck, and that they should call out before him that he was the third ruler in the kingdom. Daniel didn't want this, but I'm sure he accepted it as of the goodwill of the prince, the king, that wanted to honor him in this way, knowing that that very night it would all be naught. What did it avail this king that Daniel interpreted the writing on the wall for him, where it was a token of his eternal, irrevocable condemnation? That was the writing on the wall. And now, my hearers, there is a writing in this precious book that is against me and you. The handwriting that was on the wall, the handwriting in God's law, is that which is against us, every one of us. And now it is only Jesus that has fulfilled the law, that has blotted out this handwriting of ordinances that was against us. As the apostle says, that all blessed is he that has been given to believe in this precious Christ. And that all the accusations of the law, all the curses of the law, the death that is the penalty of it, will never come down upon your head. But that you will be forever free from this handwriting which so troubles us, which causes us so so much anxiety in this life. And now we find that that very night, Darius the Mede took the kingdom and Belshazzar was slain. My hearers, we find, as I have been saying to you, Cyrus, he had been trying to get into this city, this beautiful city, Babylon. God had pronounced by the mouth of Isaiah that this city, which was the beauty of the Chaldeans' excellency, would be brought down like Sodom and Gomorrah, and that there would not be an inhabitant that would dwell in it anymore. And God begins to fulfill his prophecy. We find this man, Cyrus, attempting to get into this city with his army. For 12 months he had been outside of that city, and they laughed at him, they mocked him, they told him he'd never get in it. And it didn't like it would, it didn't look like it would. They had such strong fortifications, and they had so many towers upon the walls that were round about this city, and they had so much food in the city, but he persisted, he persevered. And now he knew that they were going to have this festival. And all the people were busy preparing for this festival. And what did this Cyrus do? That very day when they were all preparing for this festival, he took part of his army and went up, and he diverted the course of the river Euphrates, which ran through the center of the city. He made them dig a big ditch, just like a lake. And he had the water diverted into this ditch and into this lake. But at the same time, he had his soldiers by the walls, so that the people knew not what he was planning to do. He still persevered in trying to get in. He used stratagem. And after he had diverted this river in this way, then he sent half of his army on the other side of the city and the other part of the army where he had diverted the river. And they came down the channel of this river, which was very low now because he had diverted the water away from it. They were able to wade through it. And when they got to the gates where this river entered into the city, the gates were unlocked. The people were all drunk. Even the watchers that were to take care of the gates, they were so stupefied and so intoxicated that they forgot even to lock the gates. And we find Cyrus coming in through this river into the city. And he mingled with the people. The army mingled with the people in the city, and they made such an uproar that they came near the palace of the king. And when the king heard this uproar outside of this palace, he told them to open the gates of the palace and to go out and see why they were making so much noise. And when he opened the gates of the palace, Cyrus and his army rushed through the gates into the palace, and they entered into the king's apartment, and they slew the king. They put to death everybody that they met on the streets with the sword, and the people that were atop of the roofs of the houses who tormented him and tried to prevent him, he set their houses on fire. And this is the way that Cyrus got into the city of Babylon and took it into possession. And Cyrus, he was a son-in-law to Darius, and he gave this city and this kingdom over into the hands of Darius the Mede, who was 62 years of age. He and Darius had been conquerors and had attempted to take this particular city and had been successful, and therefore he gave the reins of government over into the hands of Darius. How Darius treated treated Daniel, and what took place with Daniel, we hope to speak about, the Lord willing, next Lord's Day, if we are spared. That's all for today.